How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day, especially when the season get hectic. I stay waiting on it like receiving a Nets pick. Nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth, you might even hear a story on Gigi. So in depth, they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth, you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, John Corrales and Jay King, locked on trying to get the 18th ring. So you can miss me with the blah blah. No more Geno time, we watching Jay do the Zaza. Melis.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Locked On Celtics podcast with the Rain and Jays. Today, it's me, your boy, Jay King from MassLive.com. I'll be joined by Sam Vecenie, draft expert and NCAA basketball writer for Sporting News. Writes about the NBA and NCAA for Vice, too. You can find his work at a lot of places. He's got, what's the name of your podcast, Sam?
Game Theory Podcast.
Game Theory Podcast is his podcast if you want to check that out. We got a lot to talk about. Obviously, the Celtics decided to get nuts this weekend, trading Markel Fultz, or what will become Markel Fultz, trading the top pick for the number three pick and a future pick, which could get conveyed next year from Los Angeles, could get conveyed the year after that from either Philly or Sacramento. Either way, this is a mustard trade, a trade that could define the trajectory of both franchises, the Celtics and the 76ers, for many years to come. Sam, how surprised were you that the Celtics in this draft with Markel Fultz on the board decided to trade that pick?
So I'm surprised, as someone who has Markel Fultz in a very clear tier by himself as the number one overall prospect in this draft, I am surprised that a team would give up the ability to draft him. I think that it is a bird in the hand. I think that he would have been a good fit with Boston's, current roster. I think that, he is, like I said, the best player in this draft, and I would have just taken him and been fine. Having said that, should we be really surprised by anything Danny Ainge does anymore? I mean, this guy has gotten the name Trader Danny for a reason, right? Like, he is always looking for the tiniest edge that he can get in these trade negotiations and these trade offers and everything. And it's hard for me to believe on one hand, but then I look at who's doing it and I'm not surprised. Like, I talked to some executives like afterward, and some of them even like before the draft or before the trade officially went down, like in that like kind of limbo state. And like the thing that they all say, I mean, every executive around the NBA has incredible respect for Danny Ainge, considers him like one of the five or six best in the NBA. And they all were just like, Danny is playing some sort of chess right now. Like, this dude is not playing checkers. He is not going to do this trade without a plan in mind, essentially. What are, I just don't know what that, I don't know what that next move is, I guess. Like, and that's the problem for me. It's hard for me to tell.
Yeah, and so I figured a trade might be coming. Not that I figured a trade might be coming. I suspected another trade might be coming because, like I think Nate Duncan put it on Twitter, the number one pick was probably too much in a lot of the trades that the Celtics could pursue. Now, the number three pick with, other options later to hold on to, maybe you think about trading that in a trade for Jimmy Butler, Paul George, whatever. But then Danny Ainge came on a conference call this afternoon. We're recording this Monday night. And he said that in this draft, the Celtics did not consider Markel Fultz Well, he never said Markelle Fultz by name, but it was clearly implied that it was Markelle Fultz. They do not consider Markelle Fultz a class above everybody else, and that they suspect they'll still get their guy at number three if they do keep the pick, which is surprising when you talk to a lot of people because, like you, Sam, most people, I think, are on the Fultz train, and you can't get anybody who doesn't believe in Fultz. Like, everybody around the NBA believes in Fultz. There are some people who I've talked to who like other guys more, whether it's Josh Jackson or Lonzo Ball or whoever, but everybody believes in Fultz, and I think the other guys are considered kind of a step down. So we'll see. It was just stunning, man. It would have been so easy to just keep that pick, take Fultz, and been really happy. But obviously the Celtics, they graded out this draft a little bit differently than other people do. At number three for them, who do you think would fit the best?
So, yeah, I don't even know that they've, like, graded this. Like, I would bet that they have Markelle Fultz number one on their board. Like, I would feel pretty good about that. You know, I know that Danny kind of came out and said today, like, you know, we're going to get the same guy. I would imagine, like, that's some sort of, like, public statement, right? Like, this is what he believes. He believes that, like, you know, Markelle Fultz is not head and shoulders above everyone else. It's just really hard for me to believe that they would not have Fultz at number one on their board. And maybe there are other ancillary factors in this, as Adam Himmelsbach from the Boston Globe kind of reported, right? Like, you know, the fact that they are so set in the backcourt made them more amenable to making this trade. So given the fact, though, I do think that if you're making a trade from one to three, you have to be pretty damn sure that the number two team is going to take is not your guy, right? And you obviously have to be certain that, like, Philly is going to take Markelle Fultz, which I think everyone knows at this stage. That, along with, you know, some of the conversations I've had around the NBA, makes me believe that Jason Tatum is their guy. I think that they would take Jason Tatum at number three. I don't know that for sure. There are a lot of people that believe it's going to be Josh Jackson. You know, it's really 50-50 given who you talk to around the NBA. Like, you know, no one has, like, a sure thing. With Jason Tatum, people point to the logical fact that I just kind of pointed out. With Josh Jackson, people point to the fact that he fits, like, the exact Danny Ainge archetype to a T.
He is the perfect Danny Ainge player. Like,
right.
Danny Ainge prospect written all over him.
Right, like he is super athletic. He is a crazy ass competitor, and he can't shoot. That is the most Danny Ainge. Like, that is all. That is Danny Ainge.
That's so Celtics. Okay, but Jason Tatum is not like that. So
no,
and so the funny part about this is, like, I researched the guys at near the top of the draft. I spent most of my time focusing on Fultz because he was the pretty obvious pick to go number one. And I watched, like, 10 games on Fultz. Me and Tom Westerholm and I, we had a series of film breakdowns that we were going to publish this week. And then those RIP, those film breakdowns.
Just trade them to Liberty Ballers. It's fine.
Yes, we can trade those to Liberty Ballers for a future first-round pick.
Yep.
And they're right to select number three in the prospect breakdown category.
And the rights to the rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast.
I mean, I wish I had those. but, like, I'm a little behind on the other guys. I was getting caught up today on trying to get more caught up today on Jason Tatum, on Josh Jackson, on Lonzo Ball. What about Tatum would make him a good fit in Boston? What about Tatum would you question in Boston?
So I really like Jason Tatum's fit next to Jaylen Brown. I know that a lot of people have, like, kind of come out and said, like, you know, neither of these guys are great passers, you know, at least didn't display that in college. I think that's kind of BS. Like, you know, Jason Tatum did show off a really solid ability to make reads and pass. Sometimes he makes poor decisions. And especially early on in his college career, he made some poor decisions while adjusting to the speed of the game. But if you go back, you watch his last 12 games of the season, he was a really, really good read and react passer that I think is going to, you know, he's probably going to average like 3 assists or 4 assists a game in the NBA if he hits. Not going to be like a crazy elite passer, but he's going to be a good passer. The key with him, though, is his isolation scoring ability. He is one of the most polished scorers to enter the NBA in a long time. Over his last 12 games in the ACC, he averaged like 19-8-3 on like a 63% true shooting percentage. And I think that those last 12 games of his season are incredibly important. And the reason that I say that is this was a kid that had his preseason at Duke cut short because he sprained his foot at the Duke Pro Day, where like all of the NBA scouts and all of the media came in and had that big event that was on ESPN and everything. He sprained his foot there, and I think it took some time for him to really get back and get healthy again. And I think it's why you didn't see a whole ton of explosion. It's why you could occasionally see him, especially early in the year, struggle a little bit to finish around the rim. Foot sprains are really difficult to get over, and I believe that as he got healthier throughout the season, we saw who the real Jason Tatum is. And, you know, he's one of the most effective post scorers in all of college basketball last season. He is 6'8" with a 7-foot wingspan, incredibly fluid, has a wide variety of moves from jab step to crossover to, you know, shoulder shake to, you know, anything that you're looking for to get space and get separation as a big man in a mismatch situation. He has it. And in today's NBA, where NBA offenses and especially Brad Stevens's offense are as effective as ever at getting these mismatches on screens, given the way that teams switch screens now, having a mismatch killer like Jason Tatum is going to be such an incredible boon to any sort of offense now, because he can get his shot whenever he wants. Now, the concern is for some people, is he a good enough shooter? He was, you know, a shooter in high school that was still extending his range out to the three-point line. In college, he shot something like 34-35% from three. Over those last 12 games, obviously a small sample, shot 38-39% from three when his lift came back, whenever he got a little bit more in sync. I think that is something to kind of hold on to if you're trying to improve his jump shot. But overall, with Jason Tatum, I look at a guy who is at the most scarce position currently in the NBA, you know, a wing that can really score. And I look at him also off the floor and say that he has one of the best reputations of any prospect in this draft. He clearly, it was reported over the weekend, he wants to start this like single mothers program, clearly thinking about like things other than himself. An unselfish dude, and he works incredibly hard at his game. His godfather is Larry Hughes, the former Cleveland Cavalier. His dad played with Larry Hughes at St. Louis.
That might be a bad sign.
No, it's not though. Like he, he has a relationship from Chaminade Prep with Bradley Beal. He was over in Los Angeles, I guess it was 3 weekends ago or 4 weekends ago, whenever AAU stuff was here. He was courtside for the Bradley Beal elite team, like watching their game and stuff. He also, is known as a really hard worker on his game as well. He is a guy that works with Drew Hanlon constantly, trying to tinker and trying to, you know, kind of create new stuff to get him, get himself that little edge. He's exactly the kind of guy that you should feel confident will reach his peak.
That's a good thing to have. But the thing is, if his peak isn't as high as Markelle Fultz,
sure,
then this trade could look bad.
Yeah.
And so I guess my question for you is, how surprised would you be if Tatum or Jackson reaches Fultz's peak or surpasses Fultz at his peak? And what are the odds that one of the guys available at three is actually has a better career than Markelle Fultz?
So, yeah, the way that I would, like, if I was to break it down into percentages, I would say, like, there is a 50% chance that Markelle Fultz will be the best of the three. There's a 30% chance Jason Tatum will be the best of the three, and 20% that Josh Jackson will be the best of the three. That's just like baseline. Like, it's not like based on any sort of like scientific fact. It's just kind of like where I'm coming from here. The thing about Markelle Fultz is that he has an incredibly high baseline of skills and has an incredibly high floor because every single thing about his game translates to the next level. And that creates a high floor. It obviously also creates a high ceiling, but I don't necessarily know that like his ceiling is insanely higher than Jason Tatum or Josh Jackson's if they both hit their ceiling. I think he's probably more likely to hit his ceiling, and I think he's probably a higher floor prospect, given the fact that, like, the weaknesses are easily turned into strengths kind of thing. It's like when you go into a job interview and you, like, kind of talk to the boss and you're like, yeah, I work too hard at my job. I care too much. You know, Markelle Fultz, you can say, you know, oh, he has a 6'4" height and 6'10" wingspan. There's no reason that he can't be a really, really good perimeter defender. You can turn that weakness into a strength really quickly. So, I feel confident that Markelle Fultz is the best player in this draft. I think he's the safest player in this draft, but I don't think it's out of the question that one of these two guys is going to be better than him.
And if it's even comparable, the Celtics will win this trade. Where they'll go wrong is if the guy they pick is like an average starter and Fultz is a superstar. That's how they lose this pick, because they're going to get probably a lottery pick either next year or the year after. They'll still have the number three pick. They still have all these other assets, but they have the number one overall pick and the chance to draft a guy who everybody thinks is a safe bet, who checks off all the boxes, like you said. And that's why, to me, this trade was a real stunner, because it was so easy to just take Fultz and be pleased and see what happens. And I don't think there were real concerns. Like you said, the report from Adam Himmelsbach about the crowded backcourt. I just don't see how you can let that, if that was true and that was a heavy reason for the Celtics to make their trade, I don't get how they allowed that to be the case. Because to me, it's at the top of the draft, you pick the guy who has the best chance of becoming a star and has the lowest chance of becoming, you know, lesser than that. And Fultz was the guy. Fultz, to me, was the guy. So Ainge really put his neck out with this one, I think. And he seems confident that he'll still get a very good prospect. And these other guys to the Celtics grade out as comparable prospects. And again, like, if that happens, it's cool. Now, how big a gap do you think there is from Fultz to these other guys?
Because of the fact that I see all of his skills translating pretty easily, I do have a pretty decently sized gap. Like, even though I believe that, you know, in some world, they can be better if they hit their absolute ceiling, and Markelle Fultz doesn't hit his absolute ceiling for whatever reason. The fact that, to me, his baseline skills basically, like, make him, I don't want to say like a shoe-in, but I would be shocked if he's not a top 20 player offensively in the entire NBA. Like, that's not a nothing statement either. Like, I don't say that offhand. Like, I know exactly what I'm saying when I say that, but he's just so polished in the pick and roll. He's a good passer. He's a really good shooter. You know, he can get separation with ease. He has incredible body control and acrobatic awareness. You know, all of those skills, it's just really hard for me to see a circumstance where he doesn't become a top 20 player offensively in the NBA.
Celtics are going to cry when they hear all this stuff. Celtics fans, rather.
I know, but, like, the other thing is, I think it's a pretty easy scenario to see a world where Jason Tatum averages 20 points a game. Like, you know, and averages 7 rebounds and 5 assists. Like, he can become, you know, like Gordon Hayward level. I don't know, and we can talk about Gordon Hayward at some point, too. But, like, I think that, you know, it's not out of the question that these guys become better than him, but that just, where I have Markelle Fultz's baseline in terms of his skills, like, you know, if you told me Jason Tatum is just like a solid starter, I would be like, okay, like, I totally buy that. But Markelle Fultz, I mean, it's hard for me to see how he's not like this, like, best offensive player on a team and most dominating offensive force on a team. His, like, expected value of what he is just much higher than what Jason Tatum's is, even if, like, the best possible outcome isn't really necessarily all that far off.
You're killing Celtics fans right now. They're already devastated.
Well, like, we can talk about, like, what they got back in value, right? Like, they got back a pick that in all likelihood is going to be another top 10 pick. And Kevin Pelton did a really interesting study where, if I remember correctly, like, the difference in value between the first overall pick and the third overall pick is something like, you know, like the 13th pick in the NBA draft, or something.
in what he wrote in reaction to the trade, he said the Celtics essentially need to get a 13th pick to make the trade, you know, even value. And I don't know if that makes sense, because
I don't.
That's like.
Go ahead.
No, I don't know if that makes sense, just because I understand the point of it and matching, you know, win shares over careers or whatever stat he used to base that stat off of. But to me, in the NBA, like, if you have a better chance at getting a superstar.
Right. That's the thing.
That's the thing. Like, it's that superstar that pushes you to the next level. It's that superstar who makes possible, you know, turning the Celtics from an Eastern Conference finalist to a real contender. It's the superstar that you're always looking for. And if you have a better chance at a superstar, like the 13th pick and the third pick, maybe that's not enough. Like, you have to find that superstar somehow. And obviously the Celtics don't think Fultz is that.
Right.
And they're really sold on someone else, but.
So the thing is like a study like Kevin did, right? It's always going to overrate the median outcome, right?
Yep.
Whereas in the NBA, we know that having the variance of the potential of a top end outcome is much more important, especially whenever you're talking about a number one overall pick. If you're talking about a trade between two teams that have like the 8th overall pick and the 14th overall pick, and you're trying to, you know, kind of finagle values, I think a study like that is incredibly valuable. But at the top, whenever you're talking about two teams that are essentially star hunting, they're superstar hunting at that top of the draft, in an NBA where those players are so incredibly important, I think that a study like that, where you're judging the median value, can kind of underrate the variance of creating a superstar. And, you know, for me, I am a little bit worried about the risk of this pick, right? I do like the fact that they dually protected it, right? So it stays with Philly if it's the number one overall pick. This is the Lakers 2018 pick. Stays with Philly if it's the number one overall pick. You know, stays with Philly if it's between 6 and 30. That's good. And then they go out and get that 2019 Sacramento pick if that one doesn't transfer. The 2019 Sacramento pick is, you know, given the fact that what we've seen from Sacramento over the years, probably pretty likely to be valuable. I mean, the goddamn Chicago Bulls have been waiting for 18 years, it seems like, to get this first round pick from JJ Hickson that the Cavs traded for and like that multiple other teams traded for. But I think it's still a risky outcome, right? Because between the second worst team and the 8th worst team in the NBA this year, there were only 6 games of separation. And I think it's pretty easy to come up with like a variant scenario where the 8th worst team could have been like the second worst team this year. And I think it's pretty easy to see a scenario where with a lot of growth throughout the NBA or throughout like the Lakers, for instance, who have Julius Randle and Brandon Ingram and D'Angelo Russell and the number 2 overall pick, and, you know, now maybe Paul George, maybe we'll see. It's easy to see a scenario where they get much better and you're relying on that 2019 Kings pick, which is 2 years out as well, and which is going to allow them some time to get better and, you know, maybe get into that 8th overall pick range. And if you're talking about what is essentially number 1 for number 3 and the 8th overall pick in 2019, I think the Celtics lose that trade. If it ends up being, you know, the 3rd pick and the 3rd pick next year, then the Celtics probably win the trade. But it's a risky thing nonetheless whenever you have a bird in the hand like Markel Fultz.
Yeah, with Ainge's luck recently, it'll probably be number 2 next year, and the Nets will probably win the lottery and give their pick to the Celtics, so they'll draft 1-2. But what you were describing is why I think there's a huge, huge, huge variance on what could happen from this trade. Like, first of all, we're trying to project out how 19-year-olds are going to be in their career, which is always, always a risky thing to do, a difficult thing to do, no matter how good the prospect is. And I don't think Fultz is like LeBron James or Anthony Davis. Like, there's a chance he's not a star. And then Tatum, Jackson, whoever the Celtics take, obviously there's a chance those guys don't become stars. There is a chance, however big, that they do. And then, you know, we're looking, the Celtics will be relying on two teams, whether it's Philly, three teams rather, Lakers, Philly, or the Kings. to be bad, to give them a pretty good pick. And maybe it'll be great. Maybe it'll be great, but maybe it won't. And the other thing about this, maybe this sets up the Celtics to make more moves. Do you think, knowing what you do about the draft, knowing all you do about the draft, and Sam Vecenie is great. Everybody should follow him on the draft. Everybody should read everything he writes about it. He's great at educating us. He's great, super knowledgeable on the draft. One of the top guys to read, to follow on Twitter, everything. Go follow Sam Vecenie. But knowing everything you do about the draft, Sam, do you think the Celtics should consider trading that third pick, whether it's for somebody like Jimmy Butler or Paul George, who's not like a transcendent star, but is, you know, an all-star or all-NBA type of player?
So here's kind of what I've been saying for the Celtics kind of all offseason at this stage. What I believe is that they are more than one player away from contending with the Cleveland Cavaliers in the Eastern Conference. And with that being the case, I pre-draft, unless I had a deal worked out with Gordon Hayward under the table, I would not make this trade. I would not trade number three for Jimmy Butler or anything. If I got Gordon Hayward, I would then try as hard as I can to go out and get Jimmy Butler then. Like I would, you know, offer the 2018 Nets pick. I would offer, you know, maybe this Lakers Kings pick. I would offer, they have a billion. They have 7 first round picks potentially over the course of the next 3 drafts. So they have a lot to offer. I would realistically really try and go out and get Jimmy Butler then. If they don't get Gordon Hayward though, to me, they're not a Jimmy Butler away from competing. And at that stage, I just wonder if they're better off trying to build for being the team that is after LeBron almost, right? Like not necessarily worrying about next year. I'm not saying to punt next year. Whenever you have Isaiah Thomas and you have Al Horford and you have all these talented players, you're certainly not going to punt a year. But also I would be much more concerned about the future. If I got a good offer for Isaiah Thomas, if I don't sign Gordon Hayward, I would strongly consider that offer. Like I would really, really think about just kind of getting rid of Isaiah Thomas and really setting myself up to be the team over the course of the next like 8 years. And I know that Celtics fans probably won't like that given the fact that IT was just awesome and was terrific. But if you're more than one player away this year and you have the ceiling that the Celtics potentially have given all of their assets going forward, I'm kind of considering all options to make sure I'm that team after, especially with what I just gave Philadelphia in Markelle Fultz, which is a perfect fit to play with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. And now they have a massive core with which they're going to be able to challenge me. So I would be worried about the future a little bit more than I would be worried about the present if they don't sign Gordon Hayward. And it sucks that that's kind of the key to all of this, especially with the draft for whatever reason this year being 8 days before free agency. Typically it's like, you know, 3 or 4 and you have a much better kind of indication on the way the tea leaves are reading due to under the table negotiations and everything. But it's kind of hard for me to say right now, if they get a good offer on Thursday, they should trade for Jimmy Butler, given the fact that they're more than one player away.
Yeah, I think I'm with that. And then even if, you know, they do sign Hayward or Griffin, even then, there's a chance that they go out and make a trade for Butler or Paul George, whoever, and then still fall short of the Cavs, fall short of the Warriors,
yep,
and build this like really good but not quite great team that cost so much damn money.
Yep.
So I think even if they get 2 stars, I think it's a great risk for the ownership to take on that type of a team where they don't have, you know, that transcendent superstar, and they have 5 really good to awesome players who aren't quite at the level of, you know, LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Stephen Curry, all those guys who are really, in most cases, needed to win a title. So it's right now, it's a weird place for Boston to be in because they have so much going for them. They have so many pieces for now. They have so many pieces for later. And to me, from where I'm sitting, there's still no obvious path to contention. And maybe that team with, if they put together two of those stars, maybe that team does compete. But at the same time, like, that would be such an expensive roster. And you'd have to pay, you know, Marcus Smart or Avery Bradley, whichever one you choose. And then you'd have to pay Isaiah Thomas. You'd have to pay, like, the luxury tax would be just insane over the next few years to keep that team together. And again, who knows if they could really compete with the Warriors, who are so damn good. So many decisions. The next one comes on Thursday night, draft night. The Celtics have the number 3 pick now, which we are all more educated about thanks to Sam. Sam, we appreciate you coming on the podcast, man. Everybody else, search for Locked On Celtics wherever you listen to your podcast. Subscribe to us. Leave us a 5-star rating. We appreciate it. We need it. Those help us out, increase our visibility. So thanks again for listening. That's it for this episode of the Locked On Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.